Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rogue Report podcast in association with the Sun and Community Soup Kitchen. And you join us this week on the back of a pretty deflating, disappointing loss, another loss for Sunderland in the FA Cup, unfortunately against lower league opposition in Mansfield Town. And I'm joined by a man who's there, Craig Chapman, sporting his lovely dressing gown this late hour. How are you, Craig?
I feel like I've drawn the short straw, to be honest with you. Not only was I subject to that performance, I also done the reaction pod, and now I'm back again to discuss it in greater detail. So let's just get this on with as soon as we can, shall we?
Yeah. And also joining us is Martin Wanless from the other side of the globe. Nice and early there, Martin. Is it sunny? It looks sunny. Or are you just in a nicely lit room?
You know what? I'm just in a nicely lit room. It's absolutely belting it down.
What, with rain?
Tipping down. Ah, it's absolutely tipping down. So
I don't know why, but in my head, I just feel as though it doesn't rain in Australia.
I'm just lying on the beach in the sun, lathering sun cream on. That's it, isn't it?
Is that what everybody thinks back here?
I think that's what you think when you're in Australia. You've got the beach, you've got the surfboard. And I'm about 4 hours from the beach and it's absolutely pissing down. So there you go.
Yeah, we're already talking about things other than Sunderland, which is sort of going to be a theme here. So we lost in the FA Cup. Craig, you were there. I know you went in this in greater detail on the reaction pod. You and Paddy, very passionate little discussion what that was. I'll be honest, wasn't there, so I can't give any great insight. But obviously, the result itself was, I mean, when you get a cup draw at home against lower league opposition, you don't expect to lose 1-0, do you? I mean, I know we lost at this stage against Mansfield last year. So really, there should be no surprise that they have got it in them to come up here and get a result. But I mean, the overall performance from what you guys were saying on the reaction pod was awful, frankly, and that seems to be what I've heard across the board. A couple of days out now, do you feel any different about how we played?
No, not really. I think, I mean, honestly, for me, it felt like that was the worst performance of the week. Bearing in mind we've just been battered really at two promotion rival candidates, but it was absolutely horrendous. And I think it perhaps felt a little bit more worse because of the opposition, and you'd say no disrespect to them. But I also feel it's a missed opportunity once again for, you know, some of the squad players to come in and stake a claim for a position, because they just failed. And from the word go, I think Mansfield was so much better than us. They outfought us. They outworked us. The decision-making was better than ours. They were comfortable in and out of possession. And I mean, for those who have perhaps only seen the highlights, you could see their goal coming from an absolute mile off. You know, we were far too casual in possession. We had multiple warnings prior to that. They pressed us high. They pinned us in. And it's just becoming like a bit of a blueprint to play against Sunderland at the moment. You just force us into making mistakes. Force us into making passes we don't want to, and eventually you're going to get your reward. And I think the most disappointing thing afterwards, what me and Paddy discussed, was that we've just done nothing really of note for the rest of the game. I mean, Broadhead done well to lose his marker. He forced a decent save from a header just before half time. I think Evans had a shot which was blocked in late in the second half before Neil hits the bar. But like you say, it's three chances on goal against League Two opposition, 20th or something in the league. And, you know, two of them are coming in a final, like 10-minute huff and puff, and it's just nowhere near good enough. And, I mean, look, some of the individual performances, well, I'm sure we'll get onto them later, but some of these lads now, they're looking so short of confidence. And it's quite frightening, actually. I mean, we just spent large portions of that game with aimless long balls from the back. We're very hesitant. You've got players arguing with each other. And I think what's really starting to look, you know, kind of evident is that they've had a major shock to the system with the Charlton result. And I know we had that little reprieve against QPR, but those past three performances, it's really shook some of them. And I'll always try to be as measured as I can. And, you know, look, in the long run, perhaps it's not the worst thing to be out the FA Cup. But, you know, I've followed Sunderland for 31 years and it was genuinely one of the worst performances I've seen. It was really that bad.
What do you think's causing this slide, Martin? Because I think that's the million-dollar question at the minute, isn't it? Like, particularly for Lee Johnson, he's probably still sat now, wide awake. I bet he hasn't slept since Saturday, just going over the recent performances and games and trying to work out what's gone wrong. What do you put it down to? Because I'll be honest, I can't put it down to anything in particular, and I think it's quite a lazy sort of way to address it, but people are right. When you look at Johnson's record at Bristol City in particular, he earned a nickname of being Streaky Lee. He went on big streaks of wins and big streaks of losses there, and he was known for it. And this feels a bit like that, and I guess I would say, well, yeah, this is him sort of reverting the type as a manager, sort of going on a bit of a bad run, but I mean, it's got to be deeper than that, hasn't it? You've got to look at the players more importantly. I mean, he's not the one kicking the ball around, right?
Well, he's not, but I think, you know, you look back at his managerial career, as you say, especially at Bristol, and this is what he does. We have spells of wins and we have spells of defeats, and we saw it last season, didn't we? We had that horrible run at the end of the season, didn't we? So it's not the first time it's happened here. It's obviously, if we had the answer to it, we'd have Kirill on the phone to us asking us to manage the team, wouldn't we? Because like, we'd be able to suss it out. But it just seems absolutely bizarre that, you know, one defeat against Charlton has caused this, you know, this whole thing to fall like a pack of cards. And it has, because the performances have absolutely bottomed out. They look bereft of confidence. They've got, you know, as Craig says, people arguing with each other, and, you know, we don't seem to have an answer. And it's kind of, you get into that situation, don't you, where you kind of don't see where the hell the next win's coming from.
Yeah.
None of us could sit here and say with hand on heart, we are fully confident in going out and beating Ipswich, where after the Cheltenham game, if the Ipswich game followed that one on Saturday, we'd all be going, yeah, we'll get 3 points on Saturday, we're playing really well. And for it to fall in the space of a month from that Cheltenham performance, which I think on the site and the player ratings, we gave every single player a 10 out of 10. And that just seems a world away from where we are now. And, you know, we only see the performances, right? We don't see what goes on day to day behind the scenes. We don't see what's happening on, you know, individual levels with the players and the coaching staff. So it's really...
Johnson's been key, sorry to put him here, but Johnson's been key in his interviews before games to point that out as well. Like, I noticed in his press conference, he made a point of telling the media that he was late because they were in some sort of meeting with the defenders trying to work out. Yeah, and I think he wants to get the message across, like they're trying to address it, but obviously there's something wrong confidence wise that he said it himself, Martin. Like, yeah, rebuilding the confidence of a team of footballers is probably the hardest thing a manager has to do, and he's going to have to earn his pennies now.
Well, he is, but you know, the question I would have with that is, why does it need rebuilding now? Because it shouldn't. You know, compared to a month ago, we were high on confidence. So how on earth does it bottom out so quickly, right? And is it a case of one defeat and Lee Johnson goes into panic mode behind the scenes and does things that actually don't build confidence back up from a minor dip and it plummets, you know? But like, one of the most telling things on Saturday was, and I think Johnson said it in his post-match interview, about players coming in, and in the first half especially, not taking the chance. And he made so many bloody subs at half-time, dragged people off, who obviously he felt weren't stepping up to it and weren't in the game, you know, that tells its own story, doesn't it? Because the players who are even coming in now aren't, you know, don't have the motivation, don't look as if they want to take the place. And that's a worrying thing for me, because you expect the likes of Alves and O'Brien and whoever else to really seize those chances. And it's just not happening. So, like, something's, you know, whether something major has happened behind the scenes, or it's just the way that, the coach and staff and the players have responded to that defeat, whether it's just simply the fact that teams have sussed us out and we were finding it hard to transition to a different way of playing to overcome that, because teams are pressing us early and getting onto our backs and not allowing us time to play. But we've got to be able to cope with that. And yeah, that's a concerning thing. Like,
problem is, though, is that the thing that I think teams have clearly identified is that we're not very good physically, and you can't coach that, which is what worries me, Craig, is that, you know, we're being exposed from wide positions. I'm not talking about Saturday's game in particular, because they had one goal and it was from an individual error by Burge, right? But I'm talking more about recent performances, in that we're conceding a lot of goals from similar situations, a lot of crosses from wide, headers, balls dropping in the box, set pieces. That points to an issue, one with organisation, two with work rate, but three, generally, just that we're not physical enough, we're not aerially proficient enough in those situations to deal with big 6'4" strikers like Smith from Rotherham, for instance, you know? So that's what worries me, is that you can't actually coach your players to be bigger and stronger. You just can't. There are other things we can do, obviously, and that's what he needs to work on. But, I mean, I can't believe how easily we've been worked out, because that's very basic, isn't it? It can't have taken till mid-October for teams to realise that we're not very physical. I mean, you've only got to look at the team, right? We've been out playing physical teams and winning handily, but now all of a sudden we're struggling.
Yeah, and I think, if you kind of look at the build, for example, of some of the defenders, it's pretty similar. In terms of, they're all kind of big and slim in that respect. I mean, a lot of the young lads, Doyle, this is going to be a bit of a difficult patch for him. This is essentially where he's going to earn his experience, as Guardiola said when he sent him up here. Now it's really it's going to be learning the fundamentals of basically getting roughed up every single week. Tom Flanagan, he's, you know, started the season very well, and he's, yeah, I don't necessarily want to say he's reverted to type, but he's hit a bit of a patch. Bailey Wright, he just hasn't impressed at all, really, unfortunately, this season, minus the odd couple of cup games.
Let's not forget, though, Craig, he nearly left, right? Bailey Wright nearly left the club to go to Wigan, because clearly at some point we were quite happy to expend him, and he's still here, and we're expecting him to be able to play to a decent level. And I just look at him and I think, I mean, he's not the player that we signed, is he, really?
Definitely not. And I think if we're kind of just, you know, looking at an individual performance from him per se, the performance that he turned in on the weekend, like I said, about these aimless long balls, I mean, as a fan, we've only seen Broadhead on a few individual occasions because of injuries, unfortunately. But you know that the best thing that you can get out of him is when he's running in behind people. It's not these aimless long balls. And I think we look incredibly naive at the back at the minute. And what we're not seeing is any leadership. And the irony is that, you know, Flanagan and obviously Bailey Wright's supposed to be in the supposed leadership group. But you can't put your finger on it, because, you know, we've conceded a fair few goals now. There hasn't been that many clean sheets. And, I mean, you look at last season, in terms of we're fairly strong. Obviously, we went in a bit of a sticky patch, but by God, we didn't have to keep some clean sheets. I mean, Lee Burge was heralded for it. He was goalkeeper of the season. And like you say now, I think if I'm an Ipswich player and I'm sat down and they're looking at the videotapes previewing the game, you already need to just look at it and think, right, I'm just going to target their fullbacks. I'm just going to make sure I get in behind them. I'm going to whip a ball in, and then I'm just going to put a big lump in there and get on the end of it. We've got to do something to address that, whether it's a change of formation, I don't know. I'll be honest, in terms of some of these players, I think some of them are probably going to be on borrowed time now. We talk about Bailey Wright looking at potentially leaving the summer. I think there's a good possibility he could leave in January. I'm not sure about the terms of condition for Alves, but I think if he's hauled off at half-time because he hasn't really impressed there, he hasn't featured heavily, there's perhaps a good possibility that he could go back. And
I think it's pretty clear they're not having him. Like, I mean...
Nah, he's not favoured.
It's now November, and he's... Is that his first... Well, no, actually, it's not his first start. He started a few cup games. He hasn't started in the league. But like you've just said, pulled off at half-time. To me, that says they're not having him. Or if they are, they're just not sure when to sort of throw him in. And you're right. If I was West Ham, I'd be wanting him back. He's better off there than here if he's not going to be playing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty telling as well. If you concede 5 goals at Rotherham, you concede 3 goals at Sheffield Wednesday as well, and then you come in and, you know, you turn 45 minutes in. Granted, he was at right back, and they still turn around and haul you off at half time. I think even as a player, I'm probably speaking to my agent and saying, hey, listen, you know, it's not working out for me. But I think Johnson's already made noises to say that he's got a watchful eye on January. I think in a bit of a weird way, I know, as daft as it sounds, I think the club have perhaps prepared for this. There's no way I can't imagine that the likes of Christian Speakman has not thought we're not going to hit a rough patch. I imagine that we've already sounded out the moves that we want to make for January. I think we've got targets lined up, and I would be really, really surprised if a big central defender is not amongst that list. We have to do something about it, because, look, as bad as the week has been, you know, the season's not a complete write-off just yet. There's still so much to play for. I don't want to say the old fabled game in hand line, but like I say, come on, you know, there's still so much to play for, and as bad as we've been, we're still right in the mix.
100%. I've wrote about this on the site. It'll be up on my editorial on the website. But I think the advantage that Johnson has is that he's managing a League One side. He's not managing a Premier League side. So the ability to pick those wins up is a lot easier than if you're a Premier League team. So, you know, and we're only really one decent win, decent performance away from the mood flipping again. And I think we're all looking past Tuesday night, but it's funny. And I don't really want to go too far into it, but it's funny because if we win on Tuesday, it'll sort of be brushed off. I know it will. But if we lose, it'll be another stick to beat them with. And that's just the way it is. And I think that's sort of... Johnson knows he's got to deal with it, Martin, doesn't he? He's got to deal with this pressure now. He's under pressure, unbelievably. I mean, there are fans calling for his head. I think... I can only speak for myself. As worried as I am about the way we've played recently, I think sacking the manager is the worst thing that you do right now. I just don't think a knee-jerk reaction to what is a horrendous run of results is what we need. I think the lay of the land will be a lot clearer after the international break. And I mean, we'll not preview the Ipswich game, but Ipswich are coming up and they're a decent, well, more than decent side. They're in some better form, having started the season terribly. And I think it's a game we could probably do without, isn't it, really? But if we win that game, all of a sudden, everybody's back on cloud nine and thinking, oh, things are looking up, you know? We could end up, after that game, in third position with a game in hand. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, all right, we're back on track. So that's how quickly things can change, isn't it? It's not like, this isn't our fate now. If we lose, if we've lost our last three in the league, but... one more win in the league will change things significantly, I think, especially because it's against a decent team.
Oh, well, if we did pick up 3 points against Ipswich, which obviously we all hope that we will, it will turn around really quickly. You know, the mood and the optimism. But again, like as I said earlier, it's hard to see where that next win's coming from, isn't it? But like going on, like losing a few games isn't the end of the world. Like it's football. It's what happens. You know, we'll always have a spell during the season where we lose a few games, draw a few games, and don't pick up some wins. Like, I was just having a little look back through some promotion winning seasons. Like in 95-96 under Peter Reid, we went 12 games and only won one game out of those 12, and that was a scrappy 1-0 home win over Grimsby. And then we followed that up, going 9 consecutive wins, and then we went unbeaten until the end of the season. Like it doesn't consign the season one way or the other by losing a few games in a row, as disappointing as it has been. Like even in the 87-88 season under Dennis Smith, we had a spell where we won 1-7 And we had consecutive away defeats to Bristol Rovers. I think we got beat 4-0 at Bristol Rovers and 3-2 off Aldershot. Like, it happens. And, you know, football's moved on from those days, granted. I think there was a lot more, you know, changing your manager back then, even in 95, 96 under Reid, changing your manager back then was a much bigger deal than it seems to be now. And I think, you know, we've been conditioned as Sunderland fans over the past 10 years that come October and November, we'll have a sticky spell and we'll change the manager. And we'll hope that things get better. We'll hope that the new person will change things around. Inevitably, it doesn't make a slight bit of difference. And we rinse and repeat the same cycle over and over again. At some point, we've got to not do that. And, you know, I personally, I would be really disappointed in this new ownership, which is still a new ownership. They're under, you know, it's less than 12 months that they've been in charge. I'd be really disappointed if they sacked Lee Johnson now, because it would just say to me, well, bollocks, all's changed. We're doing exactly the same thing as Ellis Short did, as Stuart Donald did, and we're going to just keep going on this cycle of changing the manager and hoping things will get a little bit better. Now, the ironic thing is that Johnson's probably the most disposable manager we've ever had because of the setup that we've got. Like, that head coach role is really quite interchangeable because you're not throwing everything out, because you've got Speakman there, you've got the recruitment, you've got the philosophy, and that comes from higher than Johnson. Right, so the irony in all of this is Johnson's position is the most interchangeable that we've ever had. And, you know, you see at Watford, for example, where they change manager more than they change the bloody socks, don't they? But I'd be really disappointed if we did get rid of him now. I can understand why people are going, change it, because it's been crap on the field for the last 3 or 4 weeks. But as you say, it can change round in an instant. And I think we just have to, you know, we've talked about the need to do something different as a club. Over the past 6 months, we've talked about, you know, the need to bring youth players through, the need to focus on the academy and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, the consequence of doing that is that these players are going to go through dips in form.
Yeah.
And we have to, the other thing we have to do different is have patience with the manager. And look, if we go another month and we get hammered every week, then you might go, well, crap, we need to change our head coach. It's not chucking the philosophy out the window. It's not chucking the structure out the window. But you might look at changing head coach because things aren't going right. But I think we're a long way off from that point.
Where do you stand, Craig, with all that? Because it has been pretty much the theme of... I wouldn't say me... Do you know what it is? I'm diversing here, but... From my conversations with people in real life, like actual conversations, not online... Nobody's really screaming for the manager to go, who I've spoken to. But if you look online, obviously, it's quite prevalent, isn't it? There's quite a lot of people who want rid of the manager. And Martin touched on it there. Like, in the past, we've been through bad runs under successful Sunderland managers. Like, the other one you didn't mention there was probably Roy Keane, you know, who up until, I think, February, we were mid-table in the league, and we just went on a mad run where we won the title. And part of me wonders what the reaction would have been like then had there been Twitter and Facebook such an important part of supporting the club, because that's what they are, actually. They're important tools for the fan base, and we see a lot more opinion on the club as a whole from social media, and we're probably doing real life conversation. And yeah, it makes us think, how much do you actually read into that and the reaction of what's said online? I know Johnson touched on this and we won't really go into that at the minute, but the sort of reaction to every game seems to be pretty extreme at the minute, Craig, doesn't it? Like, and people are right to be angry, but at the same time, it's difficult to be measured, isn't it? It's normally one extreme or the other.
Yeah, I was going to say a bit of nuance, I think, is needed. And I think the noise on social media is very different from the noise in the stadium. And look, admittedly, at full time yesterday, they were booed off. It's no different to, you know, God knows how many Sunderland games I've been to where they've been booed off. There was maybe two or three people individually shouting for Johnson out, but interestingly, about 5 minutes before full time, there was a couple of choruses of Lee Johnson's Red and White Army, and look, you know, it's a cup atmosphere, so you don't expect a great deal. That's not slagging
them. It was only you and about 9 other people there, anyways, Craig.
I was going to say it's a small one, and look, I'm not slagging anyone off for not going. Historically, you know, cup atmospheres are never great. But no, I think you're right. I think social media really does kind of enhance everything. And I mean, look at what we're doing now. like we've this wasn't available when Roy Keane was manager, when Peter Reid was managing.
Of course, yeah.
And you think in terms of where we are now, Sunderland, I think are very unique in the sense because there's probably not even many Premier League clubs who have, you know, if you look at like the Sunderland message board, for example, I think that's been going for what, like 20 years. I mean, that is still as active as ever. You've got outlets like Love Supreme who've been going for 30 years. You've got podcasts like us. You've got Wise Men Say. You've got Speak Sunderland. You've got the YouTube channels. You've got the Fans React, SAFC Fan TV. So it's basically everywhere, isn't it? So if you turn your phone on, there is someone reacting to Sunderland news everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And you might not agree with it all. But that being said, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Football is subjective. But for me at the minute, I'm still very much, you know, of the belief that I genuinely think Johnson can get us promoted. I know it's been a horrific week, 2 weeks if you look at the Charlton game as well. However, I think we all came out of the Charlton game a little bit sort of a difference of an opinion about that particular defeat because there was, you know, some poor refereeing in there. But we still thought perhaps, look, this is a blip. But I don't think we've become a bad side overnight. I don't think Lee Johnson has become a bad head coach, bad manager overnight. Because I think the easy thing to do now is just go, well, look, you know, we've lost three or four in a row or what have you. But it's dismissing all of the good work that we've done at the start of the season. You've got to look at the teams in and around us. People are talking about how good Wigan are. We beat them twice this season already comfortably. We hammered Wickham at home. Like I said, I can only speak for myself. I understand everybody's frustrations. If you put your money in, then by all means, you've got a valid claim to say whatever the hell you want. But I think Martin pretty much hit the nail on the head for me. We've been in the cycle for so long now, it's rinse and repeat. And I think that is such a contributing factor to where we are that we just had not learned from our mistakes. Let's say we sack him now and maybe we've already got a plan for January. We'll rip that up because the new manager is going to come in and he's not going to know much about his side. And then all of a sudden he's going to want January transfer targets and it's just going to throw a big spanner in the works. And interestingly, something that came back to memory earlier was the podcast we'd done with the Peterborough chairman last year, Darren McAnthony. And he turned around and said, if you sack your manager, if you sack your head coach, at any point during your season, you might as well be writing your season off. I don't think it's as extreme as that, but I think if it was the case that we were to dismiss him now, it wouldn't fix things immediately, as people may be thinking. I've seen calls for Neil Warnock. He's, what, 72, 73-year-old? We're looking for a long-term plan. We're looking for somebody to try and take us through the divisions. We're not looking for somebody like that to come in on a short-term deal. We need somebody who's got something, you know, already in mind, forecasting what we're going to do over the next few years. We've got to stop getting out of these cycles now of bringing somebody into firefight for a couple of months and then sacking them afterwards. So for me, he stays, and I genuinely believe we will get out of this rut. I've seen enough so far to think we're a good team. We're in a bad run of form. I'm convinced we'll get out of it.
Yeah, I was going to say that because Lee Johnson, for me, and his team, at points of this season, have shown us what they can do. So we've played, I don't know how many games up to this point, but in pretty much all of them, bar the games in the last sort of 3 weeks, we've played better football than I've seen us play at this level or nearly any level really for a while. And the results have matched it. And it's just been this period that we're in now, like where things have changed. And I think that means he's got enough change in the bank to get another go at it. Like, I don't want to say a second chance, but it is really with a lot of people. A lot of people are saying they want rid of him. And that evidently means they're not prepared to give him a second chance. Whereas I think we've probably seen enough from him and his team this season to suggest that it can change back to the way it was. And as fans, all we can do is sit and wait for that to happen. I mean, ultimately, we can't do anything to enact change, really. We can't go to Kirill Louis-Dreyfus and tell him to sack the manager or give him more time. He will do what he wants to do backed by his sporting director, you know. And as you said, Martin, to be fair, it's an interchangeable position. If things are in another month's time from now, as bad as they have been in the last 3 or 4 weeks, then there will be more cause for concern. And I think there might be a change of manager if that was the case. I do think that would be enough to get rid of him. But I do also think that the system we have in place now as a club allows us to bring in people and be more flexible. But I still don't think it's that extreme. I think they'll be panicking. I do. I think that Speakman and the owner will be sat there worried about the slide, and it's not the fact we've lost 4 games in 5 or whatever it's been. It's the manner of the defeat and the performances that's concerning people most. And everybody that, and like we said before, everybody then reverts to the way things used to be. It's like, we need a new manager, we need something to change, we need to rip the plan up and start again. But I think we can all agree that things are a bit different now, and that sort of thing isn't likely to happen. I mean, we don't know that for definite. Dreyfus has never sacked a manager yet, but I just don't see it. I just don't see that happening. I mean, I could see it happening in a month's time, but not now.
No, I think like the interesting thing as well, like, is I think after the match on Saturday, Johnson said he really wished the Bradford game was a league game so they get back out on the field and put things right. And I actually think this 2-week break, which I think it will be, because I think we'll chuck an under-23 side out against Bradford, this break will come at a really good time. I think the players just need to get away from things. I think Johnson needs to get away from things. Come back a week on Monday, even like give them the week off, and just come back refreshed. Let things die down, and come back and have another look at it. Because I think it's the same as any of our works, isn't it? When things are getting on top of you, you need to step away, just get a bit of perspective on it, and come back in and have another go. And I think, you know, hopefully that break will do everybody a lot of good, because if we went into the Ipswich game on Tuesday and got beat, then that pressure and all of that scrutiny just mounts and mounts, doesn't it? And it builds up to something that's you know, almost impossible to ignore. And it will be interesting to see what Dreyfus does. Like, he hasn't been in this position before. He's learning on the job, isn't he? But his old man sacked plenty of managers in Marseille, so it'll be kind of interesting to see how he's, you know, interpreted that, picks up on that, and what his natural instinct is to do, I guess.
Where do you reckon on a League One budget that would send them away? I know Big Sam was always a fan of, like, Dubai and stuff like that. Where do you reckon we'd send them? Centre Parks or something for a week? Or
Scarborough.
Caravan
Scarborough.
Peter Reid used to just take them out on the drink and get them lashed up, didn't he? It didn't matter, like, where they were.
Portugal was a favourite, wasn't it?
Maybe that's... I don't think you can get away with that now. You can't... Especially considering most of our players are teenagers. It's probably a bit irresponsible.
I remember after the 98 playoff final, a few days after that, England were playing somebody at Headingley in the cricket, and I can't remember who it was. But I was there at Headingley, and Peter Reid was there, Mickey Gray was there, and a few others, and they were just out of it. Like, they were on the on the lash all day, and Mickey Gray got carried out of the tent at some point because he was just like... that was the way that that squad put things out of the mind. Obviously, it was the end of the season, not in the middle of the season.
Yeah, well, but I think it used to go on during the season too. I listened to a podcast last week with Michael Bridges, where he talked about being like a teenager, being dragged round the bars by the older lads. Because that was just Peter Reid's, that was his go-to. Like, if things were good, they went on the drink. If things were bad, they went on the drink, you know, and that's what worked then. I don't think it would work so much nowadays. There's too much cameras and social media and all the rest of it, isn't it?
The point with that, though, is that the team needs to just get away from football, bond, have a laugh, do something, and come back to it in a few days' time. Like, I think, didn't Roy Keane take them all going on a bloody river in canoes or something? Or paintballing, or, you know, whatever it is.
He wrote in his book, though, didn't he, that, you know, you're struggling when you're going paintballing.
Well, you go paintballing in the Algarve or something, you mix the two of them up.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they'll try something. It might not be as extravagant as that, but yeah. Anyways, yeah, cheers, lads. That's a good point to end on. I think we've moaned enough about Sunderland tonight. Probably not as much as some people might have wanted us to, but we've certainly had a few days to let our frustrations die down. I think that's probably shone through tonight. So, yeah, cheers, lads. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. Yeah, we'll be back towards the weekend for women's football weekend. Obviously, there's no Sunderland game, but the ladies are playing, so we'll be building up around that. Rich will be back with a preview pod, I think, and plenty of coverage on the site, so keep an eye out for that. And, yeah, of course, as always, make sure you check out rotoreport.com, because that's updated every day with plenty of good stuff. And, we'll catch you all later. Cheers.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.